What if the most important inventions of the 20th century weren't ours? Transistors, satellites, lasers, the entire computer age. All of it might trace back to one place. A corporate lab with a government leash, fed by monopoly money, black budget contracts, and maybe something even stranger. By the end of this video, you'll see why some believe that Bell Labs wasn't just a research center, it was a translation zone, a place where alien intelligence was quietly decoded. It's 1953 and a group of military officers walk into a class symposium in Mary Hill, New Jersey. There's no press, no reporters, just a chalkboard, a table full of transistor prototypes, and a man from Bell Labs holding something that didn't exist 5 years ago. He tells them this chip can calculate trajectories faster than any human. It can fit on a missile, and it doesn't need a vacuum tube. They stare at it like it's magic, but they don't ask where it came from, because they already know what the rumors say, that Roswell happened just 6 years earlier. And somehow, this tiny sliver of silicone might be what was pulled from the wreckage. If even part of that story is true, then every phone, every computer, every satellite in the sky might not just be technology, it might be evidence. Tonight on Divergent Files, we'll follow the paper trail from classified transistor briefings to anti-missile radar systems, to patents that vanished into defense contractors with no public record. We'll ask why Bell Labs scientists kept disappearing and whether they were building for us or for someone else. Because if Bell wasn't just a lab, then maybe we've been using alien tools this whole time without even knowing it. It didn't look like a lab that would change the world. No security fences, no armed guard, just beige buildings with a Bell logo on the sign. But inside, something strange was happening. One by one, the inventions started to appear, almost like they'd been waiting for us to catch up. The transistor, the laser, the solar cell, even the discovery of the background radiation from the Big Bang. All of it came from this one place, Bell Labs. Officially, it's just a research wing of AT&T, the phone company. Unofficially, it might have been something else entirely. A place where classified materials showed up in the middle of the night, and breakthroughs came out the front door 6 months later. Because here's the part no one talks about. The transistor, the single invention that kicked off the entire digital age, was announced by Bell Labs just 3 months after the Roswell crash. Most people looked at New Mexico, but the real story might have started in New Jersey. Hey, if you're still here, it means you're not just here for the surface level stories. You're chasing something deeper, like we are. So please do me a favor, hit subscribe, because if we don't build this community, the algorithm isn't going to help us and no one's going to tell these stories at all. All right, onward. If you've never heard of Bell Labs, that's kind of the point. It didn't look like anything special. No giant satellites, no alien crash pads, just boring buildings, cubicles, and a cafeteria that probably smelled like wet cardboard. But behind those beige walls was one of the most powerful research machines the US ever built. Bell Labs started in 1925, technically under AT&T and Western Electric, which means it was funded by your grandma's long-distance calls. It was supposed to be a corporate research wing. You know, figure out how to make phones work better. Instead, it turned into a scientific nuke silo. This place racked up 13 Nobel Prizes, over 30,000 patents, and basically half the tech running the modern world. The laser? Bell Labs. The transistor? Bell Labs. The solar cell? Still Bell Labs. And that's just the stuff they admitted to. The main headquarters was in Murray Hill, New Jersey, but Bell Labs had outposts scattered all over the place, like Holmdel, with its weird-looking satellite dish dome that looked like a villain's lair. Or Whippany, which had entire classified floors, no labels, no public tours. And Naperville, Illinois, which quietly handled tech no one wanted traced back to D.C. And guess what all those places had in common? They were all just a few miles from NSA intercept sites, black budget defense contractors, and yes, even MKUltra test zones. The phone lab was rubbing shoulders with the brain zap guys. Just let that sink in. Now here's the part nobody talks about. Bell Labs was built with monopoly money. The Bell system was basically the Google of its day, except it literally owned the entire phone system. That meant unlimited money, zero competition, and no oversight. So when the U.S. government wanted something weird built, but didn't want it on the books, guess who they called? Bell Labs could spend millions on a mystery project and just call it network maintenance. And if anyone asked questions, well, they didn't, because no one ever asked questions at Bell Labs. This place had rooms with no listed purpose. Labs behind locked doors, entire departments that didn't exist on paper. And still, people thought it was just a bunch of guys in lab coats solving math problems. If Area 51 had a receptionist, she probably worked at Bell Labs. Okay, so story time. It's December 1947. Bell Labs unveils the first working transistor. Three guys, Bardeen, Brattain, and Shockley, say they did it all in-house. A breakthrough so huge it kicks off the entire digital age. But guess what else happened just 5 months before that? Roswell. So a coincidence? Some say yes. Colonel Philip Corso said, hell no. Corso was a military intelligence officer with high-level clearance. In his memoir, The Day After Roswell, he claimed that the U.S. recovered alien tech and then seeded it into private companies to quietly reverse engineer it without tipping off the public. According to him, it went like this: Army, RCA, Bell, and then IBM. Each company was given a piece of the puzzle: fiber optics, night vision, microchips, even the transistor. They weren't inventing it from scratch. They were just trying to understand it without blowing themselves up. And guess who Corso named as one of the key labs involved? Well, you already know. Now, obviously, the day after Roswell is controversial. Some call it a disinformation campaign. Some call it a confession. Here's where it gets weirder. Because in 1949, 2 years after the Roswell crash, the U.S. military signed a formal joint services R&D contract with Bell Labs, specifically to develop transistor technology. Army, Navy, and Air Force, all involved. Not folklore, not a diary entry, a real contract. In the 1951, Bell Labs held a closed-door symposium for military contractors and defense brass to show off their transistor research. So even if you think Roswell is nonsense, the timeline of events is still suspiciously perfect. 1947 alleged crash. 1947 transistor invented. 1949 military signs on. 1951 Bell briefs the Pentagon. So what exactly were they briefing them on? And if this was a purely civilian invention, why was the Army sitting in the front row? Oh, and it gets better. Because right after these meetings, the patent explosion begins. From 1951 to 1960, transistors go from rare lab curiosities to the beating heart of Cold War defense systems. Radar, missiles, computers, everything. It's like somebody turned on a faucet and tech just poured out. They didn't invent it. They just didn't want you to know where it came from. Here's a fun thought. You don't invent the wheel. You find a wheel, then spend the next 6 months trying to explain it to a guy who's never seen a circle. That's what Bell Labs might have been doing. Not inventing alien tech, decoding it. Bell had the perfect setup for that. they weren't just hiring electrical engineers. They had a roster that looked like the Avengers of brain power. Physicists who understood atomic structure. Material scientists who knew how to melt and bend the weird stuff. Signal theorists who worked on comms and data. And AI pioneers, guys tinkering with machine learning before it had a name. And right in the middle of all that, Claude Shannon. Shannon was the guy who basically invented information theory. In normal person speak, he figured out how to turn ideas into numbers and how to measure information like a physical thing. Before him, nobody had ever treated a message like math. But now, suddenly, signals had weight, structure, patterns. That matters when you're dealing with a crashed object that's not from here and it's transmitting something. And here's where it gets weird. Shannon didn't just build the math behind computers. He also worked in cryptography during World War II. Secret codes, enemy signals, intercepts, that kind of thing. And guess who was very interested in that sort of thing? The NSA, aka the National Security Agency. The people who listen to stuff they're not supposed to. And back in the day, the NSA had a little side project called Project Shamrock. Basically, they made a deal with phone companies like AT&T to route every international telegram, fax, and phone call straight to the spooks. And guess who AT&T owned? Bell Labs. So let's spell this out. Bell Labs was working with world-class encryption guys. Sitting on top of live communications data, surrounded by defense contractors, and backed by real military money. If you had alien tech that was broadcasting anything, or a device that required decoding, or some kind of non-human operating system, you wouldn't just drop it off at some Air Force base. You would bring it here, to the one place that had math, code, metallurgy, and unlimited funding. And they'd turn it into something new, like a transistor, or a signal processor, or even a language. They didn't just intercept your calls, they were trying to intercept something else. Everyone knows Bell Labs gave us the big ticket stuff. Transistors, lasers, computer chips, and more tech than one lab should be allowed to touch. But that's just the showroom's floor. There's a whole back room of weird little inventions that don't get as much attention because they either sound too boring or way too advanced for their time. First up, zone refining. Sounds like a boring chemistry experiment, right? This one changed the game. Zone refining is a process where you slowly melt a material in one spot, push the impurities to one side, and then keep repeating it over and over until what's left is ultra pure, like NASA pure. Fan invented it for making clean silicone and germanium for early transistors. Cool. But here's the twist. If you found a crashed object made of an unknown metal and you wanted to figure out how it worked without breaking it, you need a way to clean and analyze it, atom by atom. Zone refining could do that. It's not a tool for building alien tech, it's a tool for understanding it. Next up, plastic cable coating. Okay, this one sounds ridiculous, but hang in there. In the 1940s, telephone cables were wrapped in lead, which is great for shielding and horrible for basically everything else. So Bell Labs chemist Walter Lincoln Hawkins invented a plastic coating that was tough, weatherproof, and could last up to 70 years. It made phone lines safer. But plastic like this also helps block out electromagnetic interference, which is exactly the kind of thing you need if you were dealing with high-frequency tech from somewhere else, like wiring that reacts to magnetism, or circuitry that doesn't like Earth's atmosphere. And bonus points, Hawkins later worked on materials for deep space communications. So maybe his cable coating was doing more than keeping squirrels off the lines. Third, quartz clocks. This one's sneaky. Warren Marison built the first quartz clock in 1927. Instead of gears and springs, it used a tiny crystal that vibrated at a super steady rate. That let scientists track time more accurately than ever before. And why does that matter? Because if you're trying to sync up satellites, control guidance systems, or reverse engineer propulsion tech that bends space and time, you need precision timing, like scary precise. And quartz clocks are now in GPS, rockets, aircraft, and yes, classified spacecraft projects. So coincidence? You decide. Fourth, computerized switching. Before Siri, Alexa, and the machines listening to your every word, there was Erna Hoover. She worked at Bell Labs in the 1950s and built the first software-based phone switching system. Her program could reroute calls in real time based on how busy the system was. Basically, it was early AI, except this AI didn't sell you toothpaste. It ran national communications infrastructure. But Hoover's logic system wasn't just used in phones. Later versions got adapted into missile guidance, defense networks, and allegedly, systems designed to interface with non-human comms. If you had a device that needed real-time signal translation, this is where you'd start. 5. Ultrasonics and circuits. Now we're in the weird zone. Warren Mason was Bell Labs' go-to guy for anything involving vibrations, frequencies, or sound waves. He worked on ultrasonics, high-frequency sound that humans can't hear, but machines can respond to. He also helped invent distributed element circuits, which manage wave behavior over long distances. Which sounds like tech for better phones, until you realize those same principles can be used for energy weapons, stealth tech, and exotic propulsion systems. Especially the kind that don't run on gasoline or fire, but instead run on resonance. Which, by the way, is one of the biggest theories for how UFOs move. And that makes Mason less of an engineer and more of a sorcerer. If aliens crashed here on Earth, Bell Labs figured out how to plug them in. Alright, so let's talk about something most people would never connect to alien tech. Music and computer-generated art. I know, it sounds like a side quest, but what if I told you that Bell Labs was messing with artificial sound, visuals, and pattern recognition way before it was cool? And what if those weird little art projects weren't just for fun, but for communication? So enter Max Matthews. This guy is basically the godfather of digital music. In 1957, he used a computer at Bell Labs to generate sound waves, turning math into music. It wasn't exactly Spotify material, but it was the first time a machine made music without a human playing it. Then, in 1961, he made a computer sing. The song? Daisy Bell. Now, why that matters is because in 2001, A Space Odyssey, HAL, the creepy AI, sings Daisy Bell as it powers down. And that scene was directly inspired by Max Matthews' work at Bell Labs. So now we've got early AI, computers making music, and cinematic inspiration, all coming from a phone company lab. But Max wasn't the only one getting weird. Bell Labs researchers also started playing with algorithmic visuals. Basically, they figured out how to make a computer draw, not by copying a photo, but by running code that generated images based on math, sound, and behavior. It was trippy as heck, glitchy, and way ahead of its time. They called it art, but the same tech also got used in military targeting systems, radar signal compression, and voice printing programs that could ID you by how you spoke. Now pause and think about this. They were building machines that heard, drew, and responded to patterns, and did it without any human guidance. Does that sound familiar? Because a lot of UFO sightings describe craft that respond to frequency, not control sticks. They move like they're surfing waves we can't see, like they are being played, not flown. And if that's true, then sound plus frequency plus resonance might be the Rosetta Stone of alien communication. Not words, not symbols, but vibrations. Something you could sing, draw, or feel, but not explain. So yeah, maybe Bell Labs was making trippy sound art in the 60s, or maybe they were testing channels, trying to talk back, or worse, trying to listen in. We thought they were making art, but maybe they were testing the alien radio. Bell Labs wasn't just cranking out radios and phone switches. They were building pieces of America's missile shield. And not just any pieces, the brains of the system. In the 1950s, the U.S. kicked off a classified missile defense program called Project Wizard, basically the Pentagon's first stab at shooting down enemy rockets. And Bell Labs, right in the middle of it. By the early 60s, that morphed into something even bigger. Nike Zeus. This was the crown jewel, a full-blown anti-ballistic missile system designed to intercept nukes in space. And guess who built the radar systems? Guess who designed the multifunction array control electronics? Bell Labs. They even helped design the Nike X upgrade, a program so advanced it needed radar that could detect, track, and destroy multiple hypersonic warheads at once. So let that sink in. While the world was still messing with vacuum tubes, Bell Labs was out here building space weapons that could hit a bullet with a bullet. Now remember all that weird stuff we talked about earlier? The ultrasonic resonance work from Warren Mason? The signal shielding materials from Walter Hawkins? The timing systems and semiconductor purification breakthroughs? Turns out, a lot of that shows up in missile guidance and radar tracking. But here's where it gets spicy. If they could build tech to intercept objects moving thousands of miles per hour in space, what else were they trying to intercept? Because maybe it wasn't just Russian missiles. Maybe it was something else flying too fast, too high, that didn't show up on radar. And maybe most of this was happening after Roswell, the exact same years the government supposedly had pieces of alien craft they didn't understand. You think Bell's ABM systems were just for defense? Or were they part of something else, like reverse engineering how to track and disable off-world vehicles? If Bell helped build our planetary shield, maybe it wasn't the Soviets we were shielding against. So let's stop talking about the lab for a second and talk about the people inside it. Because Bell Labs didn't just collect patents, it collected brains. And not your average I went to MIT kind of brains. We're talking next level weird genius, the kind of people who don't just build stuff. They understand things the rest of us weren't meant to know. So let's look at the short list. First, which we've already discussed, Erna Hoover for switching systems. She invented one of the first software-based logic systems for telecom. Sounds harmless, right? Except her tech didn't just route phone calls. It later got adapted into real-time decision engines for missile defense systems. Yeah, from customer service to cruise missiles. And get this, after Bell, she vanished from the public spotlight. Try to find interviews with her post-1980. Good luck. Then you have Claude Shannon from information theory. We've mentioned him already, but this guy deserves his own file. Claude didn't just figure out how to turn language into numbers. He wrote the rules for how machines understand signals. So encryption, data compression, binary code, literally the building blocks of modern digital life. But what makes it interesting is he worked in SIGINT, short for Signals Intelligence, during World War II. He helped the government break codes. So if you had an alien transmission in your hands, Claude Shannon would be the first guy you'd call. And based on how fast Bell Labs moved after Roswell, someone probably did. Then we had William Fan, metallurgy. Do you remember zone refining? Well, that was him. Fan's job was to figure out how to make ultra-pure materials, specifically for semiconductors. But purifying alien metals would require the exact same skill set. If you wanted to study a non-human alloy without breaking it or contaminating it, you would need Fan or someone working with his tools. He never claimed anything shady, but his tech showed up in military labs right after he left Bell Labs. Then we've got Walter P. Mason, ultrasonics and circuitry. The dude was a sound wizard. He worked on frequencies humans can't hear, but machines can respond to. He helped build circuits that don't just carry electricity. They carry waves, like the kind you might use to move things without touching them. So, UFO propulsion theories? Well, a lot of them are based on resonance and acoustic fields. Mason was writing equations for that stuff back when most people still thought UFO meant a weather balloon. And when he left Bell Labs, he started consulting for defense contractors, quietly. Then we have Walter L. Hawkins from Polychemistry. Hawkins invented long-lasting durable plastic coatings for phone cables. But his polymers weren't just weatherproof, they were signal-proof. They blocked interference, resisted decay, and shielded sensitive electronics from outside forces. You'd need that exact kind of tech if you were trying to protect reverse-engineered alien components, insulate non-human wiring, or hide something in plain sight for decades. Later, Hawkins got pulled into projects related to space communications. Because of course he did. Max Matthews from Music and AI? Well, we already covered him in the last section. But here's a detail nobody talks about. He wasn't just making music. He was making machines that could listen, respond to patterns, improvise, and make decisions based on frequency. So, in modern terms, that's the start of AI-driven signal interpretation. It doesn't just hear, it reacts. If aliens communicate in sound, vibration, or nonverbal energy, Max Matthews wasn't making a toy. He was building a translator. Now let's talk about who disappeared. Because not everyone who worked at Bell Labs stuck around. Some left for DARPA, the Pentagon's black budget tech lab. Some popped up in military contractor rosters. Some left with no forwarding address. And some just never published again. Their names drop off the grid like someone cut the wire. Some of the smartest people on Earth worked here until they vanished. Okay, so here's the part no one ever explains. What happened to Bell Labs? You don't go from 13 Nobel Prizes and 30,000 patents to, it's under new management, without someone else noticing. But somehow, almost no one noticed. In 1984, the US government forced AT&T to break up its monopoly. Why? Well, officially, to make phone service more competitive. Unofficially, maybe too many people were asking why one lab was building literally everything. Either way, the Bell system shattered, and with it, the lab lost its power, its funding, and its protection. Bell Labs got passed around like a corporate hot potato, first to Lucent Technologies, then to Alcatel. Eventually, Nokia took over what was left. Today, the name still exists, but the soul, it's gone. The original buildings were gutted. The Holmdel site with the big satellite dish dome was turned into a shopping mall. Because nothing says America's biggest science empire like a Bed Bath & Beyond. But here's the creepy part. A lot of Bell's work didn't get archived. It got classified. Labs were quietly shut down. Files went dark. Patents were bought up by shell companies and vanished from public records. And the weirder stuff, the projects that pushed into sound, signal materials, and resonance, those didn't go away. They just stopped showing up in science journals. Because some people believe those technologies got absorbed into black budget pipelines, like DARPA, the NSA, aerospace contractors. You know the drill. Bell Labs didn't die. It got dismantled, piece by piece, and folded into places you're not allowed to ask about. If Bell was ever working on tech that wasn't from here, or decoding something that shouldn't exist, that stuff didn't go to the Smithsonian. It went underground. And the people who knew how to build it? Well, they either retired quietly or kept working under a complete different name. You can't kill a lab like that. You just change the name and lock the doors. So, the episode's almost over. But the questions? They're just getting started. What if the story of Bell Labs wasn't just about smart people doing cool science? What if it was something deeper and stranger? What if reverse engineering alien technology isn't some sci-fi daydream, but the hidden history of the 20th century? Because it wasn't one invention. It wasn't one accident. It was a pattern. A lab in New Jersey that just kept pulling impossible ideas out of the void, right after we allegedly pulled a flying disc out of the desert. If our greatest breakthroughs weren't homegrown, if the transistor, the laser, and the building blocks of modern life were all handed to us, quietly, piece by piece, then who's really been writing the script? And who's been directing the future? Maybe Roswell wasn't a crash. Maybe it was a delivery, a gift, or a warning, or a seed planted in the middle of a phone company, just to see what we'd grow from it. In Bell Labs? It wasn't a lab. It was at the coding station. Not just for signals, but for something way bigger. Something non-human. Something trying to talk to us in the only language we'd understand. We're not here to tell you what to believe. We're here to ask the questions no one else will. Because sometimes the scariest part isn't that we've been lied to. It's that the truth was right in front of us the whole time. Filed under patents, buried in labs, disguised as progress. Bell Labs changed the world. That much is a fact. But the question isn't what they built. It's who they built it for. If this episode made you think twice, share it with someone who still believes tech is just science and not a translation. Because once you start pulling on the thread, you'll see it's all connected. This is the kind of stuff that gets lost, buried, or blacked out. Unless we talk about it. Unless we ask. So, if you want more stories like this, the kind that dig past the noise and drag the signal into the light, please hit subscribe, turn on notifications, or join the Patreon if you want to go even deeper. It's at patreon.com/divergentfiles. But most of all, stay curious. Until next time, stay curious, stay grounded, and remember, no matter what they tell you, the truth is still out there. These investigations are powered by those who believe truth still matters. Thank you to our Patreon supporters. Join the mission at patreon.com/divergentfiles.